We sit glued to the TV set all night
and every night.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of...
Welcome to episode 124 of TV Times 3. I'm Jason the TVaholic from TVaholic.com, and this week I have joining me...
Kurt Wagner from Red Eye Chicago at ShowPatrolTV.com.
And I'm Daniel Walters. I write news for The Inlander, and occasionally I write about TV as well in Spokane, Washington.
Okay, and so Kurt's been on before, so he's an old hat at this. And this is Daniel's first time, and so question that we always ask is... So how did you get into writing about TV? What is it about TV that pulls your interest?
Sure. I actually started really watching a lot of TV back when I went to Whitworth University. One of my dorm mates on the student network had just uploaded a whole bunch of TV shows. And so that's where I started watching Prison Break in 24. And really sort of got into that serialized television, began reading several TV blogs at the AV Club and Alan Sepermal's blog back then. And from there, once I started working for The Inlander, the arts and culture editor at the time asked if I wanted to take a crack at reviewing the television show, since I seemed to have some enthusiasm for it. And the first one I reviewed was Chuck, actually. I reviewed the second, going into the third season of Chuck, I talked about that transformation from the first season to the second season and how that show had improved. And I find TV particularly interesting in the way that it can develop characters over 100 hours instead of just 2 hours, like a movie could do, or 30 hours, maybe where a book can do. It can develop characters in a very realistic way, and that fascinates me, seeing those great moments of character development.
Cool, yeah, that's why I like seeing that on screen, especially when it's well done, and it just draws you in and you just can't wait for the next episode. All right, so today we're changing things up a little bit from the normal episode, and we're doing a spring TV preview, taking a look ahead at what the schedule's going to look like come March and April and into May. The schedule is always changing these days. There's always something new premiering, it seems like, and so we'll go through the week Sunday through Saturday and take a look at what the schedule looks like, and then we'll all talk about shows on that night we're either looking forward to or ones you should avoid if we've happened to have seen anything about them ahead of time. So start off with the Sundays. Sundays on the network side of things, ABC has their new show, GCB, Good Christian Bitches or Good Christian Bells. There's a gazillion different names that this thing has gone through, and it premieres on March 4th. Following Desperate Housewives, CBS will have a new show called NYC 22, taking over the CSI Miami time slot as of April 15th. Bob's Burgers returns on Fox as of March 11th. Harry's Law will move to NBC as of March 11th. The Apprentice is just starting, will just be starting up as of tonight that we're recording on February 19th. And then over on the cable side, Sunday's a big night, and it remains to be. Breakout Kings returns to A&E as of March 4th. The Walking Dead continues on. It started up back on February 12th. The Killing returns on April 1st, which seems appropriate. Mad Men returns on March 25th. HBO continues with Luck and will be followed by Eastbound and Down as of February 19th and new show Life's Too Short as of February 19th. And then as of April 1st, Game of Thrones will take over the Luck time slot. And then not long after, new show Veep will start on the 22nd of April and Girls will start on the 15th. And then Showtime has Nurse Jackie and the Big C taking over for Shameless as of April 8th, and that'll be followed by The Borges on April 8th. So lots of TV coming on Sunday. What shows are you looking forward to on Sunday nights?
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think that's the...
that's the big one.
I think that's the big one. Oh, wait, I skipped... I just realized I skipped Army Wives on Lifetime. That also starts up March 4th.
That's sure, funny. I think that Game of Thrones is... Have you read the books, or are you just following the TV series?
I am a TV-only person.
I've read the book up to the second book, you know, the first and second. So I read the first book before the first season started, and I read the second book in between.
Okay. Because I'm sort of wondering how does the show compare to the people who've actually read the book? Is it, having already read the plot, does that take away something from the television show?
No, because they add scenes, and you know what takes a minute long scene on the show is 500 pages in the book. You know, those books are huge, so
yeah.
they have to do things, you know, differently. And I think all the choices they've made have been really good. Like the first season, I just spent yesterday looking at the DVD, the season one DVD, and I was totally sucked in again. I wanted to stay up all night and watch the whole season all over again.
What fascinates me is how much better Game of Thrones is than things like the Tudors or the Borgias or these others. You know, I mean, obviously it's fantastical as opposed to historical, but it seems to really improve on those. And I think that having the writing background, having it be a novel first, really helps in developing strong characters and developing twisty plots in a way that having to ally with an historical narrative cannot.
Right. Well, I felt it's so funny because, you know, as fantastical as it is, at times I felt like it was more sort of historical drama than, remember Camelot last year? That started about the same time as the first season of, you know, Camelot and the Borgias both were all three of those sort of started around the same time. But at times I felt like Game of Thrones felt almost more historically accurate, which is weird.
This has no basis in our reality whatsoever.
I know, but I did.
That just tells
you
how good it is right there.
Yeah.
I see two potential problems, though, for Game of Thrones going into the second season. One is the challenge of being able to convincingly portray war scenes, which one of the things that it wasn't really able to do in the first season because of budget. And then there's a further expansion of the number of characters, which I think could be a problem both for the budget of the show and just for semi-casual viewers to be able to follow it. Following the first five episodes of Game of Thrones is hard enough. Now that we're adding, you know, how many more characters could be even a bigger challenge.
Yeah, but we killed off a bunch, so.
Yeah, that helps.
It could be a wash in that respect. But what I think happens, too, is, you know, the second book, you're never at, like, the Eyrie. You're never really at the Wall, either. So it's almost like, you know, they're adding these people, but then some folks are not going to be around at all. In the second book, I'm sure it's not going to be the case of the TV show, but Jaime Lannister is hardly in the second book.
Interesting.
You know, but they'll want to keep him around, I'm sure, for the season two. But
it was interesting to see that the twist with Ned in the ninth episode of the first season. I thought that was something that could have only been done if it had been a... book first. That's not something a TV series I don't think you really do. I mean, there's some TV series like Lost thought about killing off their main character
right.
In the first couple episodes, but they ended up not doing it. And there's very few shows that are actually willing to kill off the one character that's considered to be their main character in the service of the story. It all made sense. It was a twist that made total sense if you just followed the characters, but it didn't make sense if you followed the rules of TV grammar. And that's why
right.
It made it such a great surprise.
Right, I can't think of, geez, off the top of my head, I can think of maybe one example of a main character ever being killed off. But I don't know, it was kind of an ensemble, so I wouldn't even necessarily say it was a main character. But yeah, it was just as shocking to see it on TV as it was to read it in the book. When I read it in the book, I stopped reading for about a week.
It did have a pretty great effect, because while there was a lot of characters... This was sort of like the head of one side of, you know, sort of the different battles and things that were going on. And so to see somebody like that taken out early on in something, even though it's late in the season, but early on in what is potentially the story,
right.
Is definitely an interesting way to go for a TV show.
When, if you think about it, they took two major characters out because the king died too.
Yeah, that's...
Right. Which is sort of a surprise, but yeah.
I mean, that wasn't as shocking, I guess, but again, you know, he was a major player.
I don't think anyone expected him to die via boar. Like, that was probably the least of all the characters you thought would kill the king. The boar would not be the one that would be you would suspect. And so that was almost, it was kind of interesting. He died almost as an anticlimax, but ended up, you know, it was those deaths ended up being a catalyst, of course, of all these other problems. Right. Right. I just watched the GCB pilot last night. I was wondering if any of you have seen that one as well.
I have.
I have too.
I thought it was interesting. It obviously fits in with the Desperate Housewives. Idea, but it also it almost is even more of a spiritual successor to Gossip Girl, any one of those CW shows that are sort of fueled by this notion of gossip.
Yeah, it's almost like bumping Gossip Girl ahead like 15 years.
It's Mean Girls grown up.
Right, in a kind of a way, almost a kind of a, there's that young adult movie that came out that I think kind of almost had this similar sort of premise of, I think that setting it in a, it was interesting setting it in kind of this hyper-judgmental religious context was an interesting choice, because I think shows like Gossip Girl sort of have a problem where gossip is almost predicated on judgment, and when you have characters that just, you know, kind of sleep around a lot, well, that's sort of expected. There's not that judgment that makes gossip as delicious and juicy, and so setting it within that Christian hypocrisy world in Dallas, I think makes for the gives the show a lot more interesting stakes and makes it a little bit more fun.
Right. I was actually going to say just about the same thing with the religious aspect of it, and the fact that the, you know, sort of quote unquote most religious person is kind of the bitchiest person.
I think it's
a judgmental person. You know, I thought that was interesting and makes for some of the funny stuff.
I think that the show could do well to add a few like genuinely good religious characters just to sort of balance it out. Or, you know, because I mean, I think that I've known a mix of people in my life, and a lot of the religious people I know have been, you know, incredibly nice, caring people. And I think adding those sort of people could give a far more of an interesting contrast to some of the hypocrites in that show, and maybe give you something to root for, which right now I'm not sure who we're supposed to be rooting for in that show. maybe the little kids.
Yeah, you're supposed to sort of be rooting for, you know, the lady that has to move back to town. Is sort of the way it's set up is sort of who you're supposed to be rooting for. But then because she's changed from, she was the terrible person back in high school.
Right.
And she supposedly have changed. But it definitely is an interesting place, you know, in which to set the show. I think you're right. You probably need some sort of balance, because if just everybody all the time is just these going at each other, that could get old after a while. I thought it was, you know, it was a fun little show. I think they're definitely hoping that it does well so that it can bump up an hour next year and take over the Desperate Housewives time slot. That's since that show's ending.
Well, I think the Marisol Nichols character is sort of supposed to be the nice, you know, still sweet. She's the dark haired with the real, she's the real estate agent. Cause she sort of befriends, she stays friends with her friends and befriends the woman who comes back to town as well. So that might be one person who's not going to be just a bitch.
Well, I thought it was better than a lot of. It's kind of interesting. I think ABC has pretty much had the best development slate overall for network television that I could think of. I mean, most of the others were pretty missed, but ABC kind of has these. They're doing well with their guilty pleasures, which I think that no one else is really able to capture right now.
But they've also, while a decent part of it tends to gear towards the female audience, they still have an interesting slate of shows that things that they're trying, you know, like with The River or Once Upon a Time.
Right.
Different formats to of shows, of things that they're trying. And they've had a pretty good slate. The only other show I'm sort of looking forward to just a little bit, just because it's just sort of mindless fun, is Breakout Kings. I actually liked the first season of that. It's just, you know, they're chasing down the bad guy a week, but they created some interesting characters that they threw together to follow along with.
My problem with Breakout Kings is that it seems like they're trying to go for sort of some of the mindless fun of Prison Break, which I think TV needs more of. But there's two problems with that. First is that they have the creative Prison Break section happens in the first 5 minutes of the episode.
They have to have one every episode.
Right. And then the rest of it is just sort of the mindless the kind of the running around chasing criminals, which there's about, you know, 15 shows on television that do that exact same thing. And so there's not much new added. But then it's so like gory and gritty and violent and that, like, you can't have like the Con Air feel, the Prison Break feel, and grisly murders and rapes in the same time. And so I think there's a kind of, the show is at odds within itself, and it's a lesser show because of it.
Yeah, it's not great, top-notch entertainment, but it was better than I thought it was going to be, but definitely not as good as it could have been. Okay, I think that's enough for Sundays, and we'll jump ahead to Monday, which over on the network side, Dancing with the Stars returns as of March 19th. Let's see, CBS's lineup stays the same. As of March 5th, Alcatraz is going to move up an hour, and it'll be followed by Touch as of March 19th, and then House will return as of April 2nd back into to finish out its run. And then over on the cable side of things, ABC Family has The Secret Life of the American Teenager starting back up on March 26th, and that'll be followed by Make It or Break It as of March 26th. And Sci-Fi has Being Human and Lost Girl running, and then as of April 16th, the final season of Eureka will start up, and that'll be followed by the second season of Lost Girl. So what about Monday nights?
Here's the question. I'm wondering if there's a possibility Touch can be a good show with Tim Kring as the head writer, who used to be the guy from Heroes, who was infamously bad. And I'm kind of wondering if it's possible that Touch can can beat its kind of its pedigree there and succeed.
You know, I felt like the first episode or that sneak peek or whatever could have been a really good movie, and right. I worry that you're right, that doing it week to week, it's going to get very sort of procedurally and very false. What do you want to say? Sentimentality, you know, like each week he's going to find a way to communicate with the sun, and we're supposed to be, you know, have a tear in our eye, and it's just going to start to get all the same each week after week.
Yeah.
And that the coincidence are that the connections are going to become so weirdly, unbelievably coincidental.
Yeah. In the first episode, I think it was like the way everything comes together and stuff, I just thought was, you know, incredibly creative. And the idea to be able to put like all those things together that sort of are connected to each other is pretty impressive. But then again, and while I really love the first episode, I think that opening episode has a great arc. It leaves you with, but is this going to be the show? What is the show? You still, at the end of it, you weren't exactly sure what the show was going to be. And if it was just going to be every episode, you know, the long-term arc is him getting somehow closer to his son, but basically it's, you see how these things are connected and it plays out in the end. I think seven episodes from now is not as interesting. Nothing else behind it.
I think TV is sort of limited in what it can really tell us about how we're connected, in the same way it's limited to what it can really tell us about the reality of the supernatural or of religion, in a sense, because it's not like reality is connected when these shows tend to say reality is connected. It's the writers are making reality connected. And so I think that I'm not sure what shows like Touch can really tell us about the world around us, or even if they're intending to.
Yeah, you kind of get what is the... There was no bigger story thing, you know. There wasn't something like behind all this that was to be, you know, needed to be found out over the long term or something like that. It definitely set things up as a story of father and son that are going to get into these weekly things and be amazed at, you know,
they're gonna
that they happen. And then some of the things they won't even know, you know, only us as the audience actually get to see how some of these things were connected.
Well, I did a call that Sutherland was on, and Kiefer Sutherland was on, and he said it's a procedural, basically. And so if that's the basis of it, that each week he deciphers something his son's trying to, or his son figures out, whatever, and saves the day, you know, saves somebody from doing something, then yawn. I mean, you know.
Maybe that's a good thing, because if there's one thing that Tim Crean can't do, it's serialization. Yeah, I mean, that was a huge weakness with. He was not bad at the kind of the moments of the Heroes wasn't bad in the real moments of procedural nature of it. It was kind of fun there. It was a huge problem when they tried to do serialization. And anytime shows try to show that there's some big mystery behind it all, it's invariably asking us to be disappointed.
Yeah, but I think I'm more interested in the long-term storytelling. That's just me, maybe, though.
It's also sort of interesting is right now, TV creators seem to think, you know, or the network seem to want the procedural with the long-term arc for those that tune in every week, for those people to follow, but also for it to be accessible on. And so to see something that almost goes more CSI, Law and Order type thing, where there may be a little bit of development of the main characters over the long term of the show, but basically it's about whatever, you know, the events of the week or the murder of the week or the case of the week, or, you know, in this case, whatever the connections of the week are.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm definitely interested to see more episodes to see if they can maintain that payoff like they do in the first episode. But like you said, will it start to feel too, you know, cheap or schmaltzy or something like that over the long term? I guess we'll see. But again, another show that definitely Fox is hoping does well with, you know, House ending.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for something to hit this season that they can. They've got a lot of decisions to make with some of their new shows this season. Looking forward to the return of Eureka, even if it is sadly the last season. I've loved that show since I saw the very first episode.
So have I.
And just one little comment on The Secret Life of the American Teenager is that I saw The Descendants yesterday as part of AMC's Best Picture Showcase. Yeah. I saw four of the Best Pictures yesterday in a row. But I saw The Descendants, and you watch Shailene Woodley in that, and you can't even believe that she's the same person that's in Secret Life of the American Teenager. And it's just another prime example of that the writing and the directing on that show is incredibly terrible. But that's all I just had to say. another example of that. But I think with that, we can jump on to Tuesday. Tuesday, ABC just had Cougar Town start up on the 14th of February.
Woo!
And The River finishes its run. Dancing with the Stars results show will take over as of March 27th. And Private Practice will be moving to close out that night as of April 24th. And then as of March 6th, Fox is going to the two-hour comedy block with it'll be Raising Hope, I Hate My Teenage Daughter, New Girl, and Breaking In. And then as of April 10th, Glee will return to finish out the season, and Raising Hope will jump back behind New Girl. And then NBC has a new, some sort of reality competition show, I assume, called Fashion Star, starting up as of March 13th. And then on the cable side, there's not really much to speak of coming. The Justified will still be playing, but any of those that you're looking forward to?
Justified and Southland, too, on TNT.
Well, it'll still be playing some episodes for the next couple weeks.
Breaking In is going to be interesting. I never expected that show to survive. I mean, it was Canada, all the shows to be suddenly saved out of nowhere. It was Breaking In that ended up being the show that.
Well, it did get canceled, didn't it?
Basically, yeah. From what I understood, then all of a sudden, somehow via some devil deal or voodoo resurrection, it's alive again.
Breaking In got canceled, but then as part of, I'm blanking on the guy's name behind the show, but he had a new show in the works, and Fox bought that, but part of the deal was we'll buy that and pick up Breaking In for a second season. And so it was sort of, we want your new show so bad, we'll even restart up your old show.
I'm always disappointed that Breaking In isn't a better show, because it's unique in the fact that it's a unique premise. I mean, most comedies are basically the workplace comedy, the general office workplace comedy, or the family comedy, or the friends hanging out comedy. this, as far as having like a heist comedy every week, is something that has a lot of potential, but I think it's only hit that potential rarely.
It has really funny moments and sort of the, you know, the the geek humor, and I'm interested to see how things change up with adding Megan Mullally to the cast along with everybody else. I was definitely happy that it got picked back up. I thought it was a show that they should have tried to keep around, that it did well enough and was also good enough with the potential to be better, to, you know, as something to keep around, since Fox has so much trouble with comedies most of the time.
I Hate My Teenage Daughter.
Yeah.
Breaking In, it made me laugh a whole lot more than it made me roll my eyes. I have to say that.
That's good. How would you guys improve the show? Is there any way that you could see it really, to take it from being pretty amusing to being a genuinely good comedy?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the element is. I think sometimes they need to almost have where they didn't have a break-in or, you know, or something that they were doing in the episode. I think they need to have at least a heist or some sort of thing where they're actually testing out some system each week.
Yeah.
But they also run the trouble there where, you know, the comedy comes out of things not going right, but they're also supposed to be this top-notch team. So how do you do that? I think sometimes some of the characters just went a little, like they went just too far, too wacky, too weird, that it started feeling like too fantastical. I don't know, it maybe needs to be grounded a little bit more.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I thought a lot of the, you know, I just said that it made me laugh more than it made me roll my eyes, but now I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting myself. as much as some of the one-liners that really have nothing to do with the heist or the situation at hand made me laugh, I think maybe they rely on that a lot more than sort of comedy that has to do with exactly what's going on, you know? Like, the geek humor works a couple times an episode, I think, but it should be more about the situation at hand, I guess.
You see, know, I think the geek character is one of the bigger problems of the show, in the sense that, and a lot of shows have this problem, that they don't really understand, like, the depths of what a nerd actually is. It's like these people that believe, oh, nerds like Star Wars, and so they run around dressing up like a Wookiee in a Wookiee costume. When in reality, what's kind of, and to a certain extent, Big Bang Theory understands this a little bit more, is that it's funny when these nerds are incredibly detailed about the specificity of the thing they're passionate about, rather than just referencing the most obvious Star Wars references.
Right. Good.
Yeah, that could be too. I think that sort of plays into, did either of you watch the Comic Men show on AMC?
No,
I haven't. Sorry.
I didn't either, but one of the little thing on another podcast, I heard them talking about it, and the thing that they said that the problem with that show was, is that for the type of show that it was, you would think that you're going to see that type of stuff. And that the discussions and things that were happening were incredibly bland. They weren't these incredibly geeky. It was like they whitewashed, hoping to. But why would you watch a show like that if you weren't seeing these people in their element, incredibly passionate about some minutiae, piece of of Spider-Man or something like that, you know, or Wonder Woman or something like that? Just they sort of missed the mark on that. And I think that could be, is that it's always sort of the more obvious thing on Breaking In. But yeah, it could be better, but I'm glad to see that it's getting a chance to be better. Okay, on to Wednesdays, where ABC will have Don't Trust the Bee or Bitch in Apartment 23, taking over the Happy Endings time slot as of April 11th. And I Hate My Teenage Daughter will be moving as of April 4th to follow 90-minute episodes of American Idol. And over on the cable side of things, BBC America has the second season of Whitechapel starting up on March 26th. Comedy Central has new seasons of South Park and Ugly Americans starting up on March 14th. TV Land has the new season of Happily Divorced starting up on March 7th. And USA Network has the return of the sixth season, to finish out the sixth season of Psych, as of February 29th. So what about Wednesdays? any of those shows strike your fancy? I'm super excited for Psych to come back. I think they're having Yeah, I think they're having a fantastic season. Seen the first episode back. It's pretty much the whole thing is a riff on Indiana Jones, and it's incredibly well done. I think it's sort of interesting to see a show that I've always loved, you know, sort of like Eureka, but had a little bit of a downturn in season four, but then really found themselves again in season five and have just been pretty much on fire ever since.
The one that I was really surprised how much I enjoyed The Apartment 23, even though it started out with the exact same way as New Girl, and we thought that was sort of going to be sort of the same show. But it has a real sense of its comic tone, which a lot of comedy takes a very long time for them to really get a handle on what that comic tone is. It's something that you could either really enjoy it like I did, or it will really annoy you. It's kind of like Psych in that respect. But it's something that I suspect it could be a lot more successful than people may guess it would be.
I laughed in the first episode, but the things I laughed most at were the James Vanderbeek jokes, sort of at the expense of, you know, Dawson's Creek and some of the movies that he's been in. I was like, okay, the things that I found most funny in this episode, you can't rely on every episode. Like, you can't go back to the well and do a Dawson's Creek joke, like, forever. That was the only thing, is it left me at the end, what is going to be the funny stuff every week? I mean, what is going to be the show every week?
Well, it's pretty clear you have the contrast between the kind of the shrewish character and the and kind of the more sunny character. And that's the classic odd couple relationship, just with their two contrasting personalities. So I think it's pretty easy for them to write plots from that going forward.
Well, I hope so, except that side of the stuff didn't make me laugh in the first episode. That's the only thing.
I was annoyed by almost every single person on that show.
Yeah, I could see that.
And, yeah, I watched it really a long time ago. I should have watched it again. But if I remember right, even the Sunny character becomes kind of bitchy at the end.
Yeah.
The first episode. Is that true?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I didn't like anybody in that. And therefore, I couldn't get into it. I don't recall laughing that much either.
That was the only thing, is I remember that the things that I laughed at were all the jokey references that were either sort of in the background or explicitly made in the foreground of, you know, joked around James Vanderbeek. So I was like, going forward, how do you use him as a version of himself to continually be funny when you can't go back to those jokes just all the time? There's not enough of them. So, but I'm interested to see where they go with it. It definitely has its different style. I don't think, as with we talked about actually on last week's podcast, that we actually thought that Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23 and Cougar Town and
Happy Endings, maybe?
And Happy Endings, that along with some other show would make a good, like, 2-hour comedy block, and that Last Man Standing would actually work better, like, go Last Man Standing, The Middle, Modern Family, Suburgatory on Wednesdays would actually make a more logical group, since they're all more family-based, and these other ones are all sort of different style but of comedies, but are more friendship based.
Well, they're all really manic. I mean, they all have a certain sort of manic excitement and exuberance with Happy Endings, Cougar Town, and Apartment 23 that most of their shows really don't have. I guess the closest comparison I would say would be 30 Rock with the kind of the joke a minute style.
Right.
Yeah.
And a little bit absurd at times, I think. Like absurd situations. So I watched the first episode of Whitechapel last night.
The first episode of the first season or of
the second season. Yeah. And I really liked the first season of that. I don't know if you guys saw it or got into it.
I watched most of it. I didn't make it through. I mean, it's still out there on demand for me to catch up with, but I thought it was pretty good. Their play off of, you know, sort of trying to track down, you know, a killer that's basing their crimes on old unsolved, you know, like Jack the Ripper and stuff like that.
Right. The copycat killers. And this season's interesting because it's not Copycat Killers, which I was worried that, oh God, it's going to be every
the first season that played here, I think it was actually sort of a conglomeration of what played as series one and series two, I think,
right.
Maybe over there. And that what is playing here as season two is actually what would be series three over there.
Correct.
If they were doing if all of a sudden there was a third copycat and a fourth copycat, that would start to get a little weird.
So what happens is that guy, the author who, you know, does the histories of the crimes, they sort of hire him as a consultant. And so he's, you know, when they have this case they can't figure out, they're like, well, what in history can we look to help us figure this case out? So they're not direct copycat things, but they're trying to use history as a tool, I guess. They're an investigative tool. But I love the characters, and I love the sort of dark, gritty way that it's filmed and everything. And the British accents.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump ahead to Thursdays. ABC has new show Missing starting on March 15th, and then Grey's Anatomy, and then new show Scandal will follow that as of April 5th, and then Bones returns on April 5th as well on Fox, and new show Awake starts March 1st on NBC, and there's not much going on the cable side of things, other than a few shows that may still be playing episodes that started up before then. But a decent bit of new shows starting up on Thursdays.
I just started watching Awake, the pilot. I haven't gone all the way through yet, but I've been really interested in how the lead character portrays himself, as he acts in a very almost half sleep like way. It's the whole feel of the show is almost sort of dreamy. In a way that's subtle enough not to be obtrusive or not to be obvious, but a way that definitely sets the atmosphere for the show perfectly.
It's very moody. You're right. I love the idea of my favorite scenes are the ones where he's on the couch with one therapist in one reality, you know, he's either his dream or his reality. And then he starts answering a question and you look over and it's the therapist from the other one. And, you know, those are kind of my favorite things, and they're just talking scenes. I kind of could give a crap about the actual criminal investigations that he does. But I think I'm going to be in the minority for that, because you could say those are the slowest scenes, but those are kind of the more mind-bendy things about the series.
I think so, too, that those scenes are pretty good. But I'm also interested to see, because they seem to be playing it as things that he finds out in one reality seem to be possibly helping him out to solving the case in the other reality, and how are those things connected, or, you know, what's really going on with him? So they've set up lots of sort of mind-bendy, twisty things in there. But, yeah, some of the it's a little bit slower moving, but I think the first episode is completely engrossing. I mean, it just, the performances are great. The way that they cut between everything and set things up, I think, is great. It is definitely a show, though, that you look at with that premise and go, how long do you go? Like, how long can you really go with this? But I'm interested to see a couple more episodes to see what, to really get the feel of what, you know, the weekly series will be. Because, again, this was right there at the top of the list of all the, you know, all the pilot episodes of new shows this year, and Awake's right there at the top. But all the ones that I thought are great have all left me with, I'm not really sure how they go from here in the long term.
Well, you guys tell me this. I feel this is a really challenging show, especially for Broadcast Network. And it's kind of, you know, the pace is not necessarily, you know, like any kind of CBS CSI thing or anything, and it makes you think a little bit. But how do you think that's going to do? How do you think it will do with, you know, an NBC show with I always consider my parents, would my parents watch this, Middle America Folks?
And I don't think
no, they will not be patient enough for this. And it kind of makes me sad.
Some networks might be able to launch it in a way. Maybe some cable network, but there's no way that NBC will be able to we'll be able to bring in enough viewers to keep the show afloat, which is really disappointing because it's so ambitious. I mean, probably the most ambitious network show since maybe Kings, which was another NBC show that there was no way that was going to succeed.
Right.
I hope people give it a shot, but I think while waiting to do some of these things, you know, later on, I think some of the things like premiering Smash and waiting to premiere that after The Voice, you know, those type of things make sense. But stuff like Awake, it almost has, when you go and put something like it, it's hard to tell people in short ads and stuff like that what it is and to get people interested in it. But also coming in, people that, you know, are watching The Mentalist and Private Practice. And so far, nothing that's gone on Thursday nights have been able to draw anybody else's attention either away from those or a different audience that isn't interested in those shows. And I'm not sure that people that would be interested in Awake, that there's like enough people that, you know, that would be interested in it that'll watch it that aren't already, you know, sort of stuck in their what they're watching.
In their habit.
The TV numbers are still based on who's watching it right then when it airs. So based on that, I think it's going to be tough putting in, you know, sort of the third show to try and fill in Thursday nights. I'm not sure where else they could have tried to launch a show like this, or if it would have been better to launch it back in the fall, or I don't know. But I definitely hope people give it a chance because it is right up there. You want to see something different and more ambitious and stuff like that. And then if nobody watches it, they go back and they bring another Law and Order, you know, out.
Right.
Or some version of that. And I don't want to see that.
Well, it again has, you know, it has the whole procedural aspect to it, but it's ambitious and it's different and it's trying to change that genre a bit, you know, but I can't see people who watch The Mentalist on CBS going, oh, we should try out this other one.
Yeah.
Because I can see the first time they see that he's in two realities, they'll go, oops, too much to think about.
Yeah. That is the thing, is it definitely feels more cable drama-ish,
mm-hmm.
in that the audience that it'll draw, if it could draw that, I hope it draws better than I think it's going to, but the whatever audience that it draws, if it drew that on, you know, AMC or FX or something like that, it would be considered a hit, but in the network realities, that just isn't going to do it long term. So what about, have you seen Missing or Scandal?
No, I haven't.
Missing? I got to say, I love a woman who can kick ass. And I don't know how it's going to go in the long term, but it's fun to see her, you know. I want to find my son, and I'm going to kill anybody who gets in my way.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly, like, on a long, long-term basis, but on a 10-episode season arc, it's definitely interesting. And I went into it, I had read nothing about it. I mean, I knew that Ashley Judd was in it and that somebody goes missing or whatever, but I had no knowledge. And so when she starts kicking ass, all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, so this is sort of like Taken. She's Liam Neeson trying to find her son, except it's going to be on a 10 episodes going around, searching Europe all over the place. I'm on board for that. I thought it was pretty well done.
Daniel, that sort of fits what you said about ABC's good with the guilty pleasures.
Yeah, no, I could see that being a...
As long as they don't extend it, as long as they learn from the killing and don't extend the
kid being missing for more than 10 episodes.
Right.
They need to keep those arcs relatively short and then move on to somebody else being missing or something else being missing and some new plot for I think, to maintain both viewer interest and critical acclaim.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where you go, okay, if she's still searching for her son and kicking ass 3 years from now, even if the show is not taking place over, that period of time, it still seems...
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the first two episodes, you're really only a handful of days past when she realizes, her son's missing. So it's on a shorter time loop.
Right.
And Scandal is interesting in that it's a Shonda Rhimes show.
Oh, boy.
But other than one relationship type thing, it's not really about the relationships of the characters or the characters intermingling with each other. It's really about whatever the crisis of the week is, that they're the crisis management law firm that handles these things. They do set up a longer arc involving, you know, the White House and stuff like that, since it's set in D.C., which I think is almost too big, and this type of stuff that they do with that is so, like, Clinton intern type of, you know, we've been there, seen that type of stuff. That stuff is not interesting. The cases of the week are kind of interesting in that they're sort of like fixers, and they take on all these different types of cases. I think that part of the show is interesting, but in this case, the overall arc type of stuff that they've set up is not interesting to me. I think they sort of overshot with that. But yeah, those are Thursday, so on to Friday. We've got Undercover Boss started up on the 17th of February, and A Gifted Man moved over to the CSI New York time slot, and it'll finish out its run for the season there, and then CSI New York will return as of April 30th. Fox has new show Hotel Hell starting up on April 6th, and Fringe will go on a mini hiatus for about 3 weeks or so after the end of February, and will come back to finish out the season as of March 23rd. And then on the cable side of things, HBO has The Ricky Gervais Show and new show On Freddie Roach starting up on April 20th. Starz has new show Magic City starting up on April 6th. And USA Network has the return of the second season of Fairly Legal starting up on March 16th. And the final season of In Plain Sight starts up on March 16th. Not much. I mean, still definitely continue on with Fringe and definitely in on Nikita this season. But of the new stuff coming, I'm interested in the final season of In Plain Sight. I've liked that show. And I have a vague notion of what Magic City is. Do you guys even... I didn't have a chance to go look that one up.
Isn't it about a hotel in Miami and gangsters and yada, yada, yada? I think that's what it is. Some guy gets in with gangsters to open a hotel and...
Yeah, Miami mobsters in like 1950s.
Okay.
Yeah, in the 1950s.
I'll probably check it out, but...
you know, Starz, I don't know, it could be interesting, but it could be Camelot again. Yeah. It has a good cast. It has a lot of Jeffrey Dean Morgan's in it. He's the main character, I think, and some other folks, but it's always hard to tell with Starz.
Here's a question. Do you feel that the Ricky Gervais Show, does having animation add anything to the podcast, or do you think it subtracts?
Jason, you're going to...
I don't really listen to the podcast, and then I watch like a little bit of the first. I don't know. It gives you a different way to see it, I guess. But to me, overall, it's not overly interesting either way.
Yeah, I wasn't interested enough to watch. Really, sorry.
I just thought that it's a very cruel show in a way that this is sort of disturbing that we're actually asked to laugh at a person at a person rather than with a person, like an actual person. Which is, I think it's typical of Gervais's humor, but that kind of made for an uncomfortable show.
Yeah, I think that maybe some of it is that while it's animated, what you're watching is animated, and so it almost tries to play the humor off as sort of Family Guy style, but you know that it's actual people. Like, it's not just an animated thing made up. But that's, you know, sort of the problem I have with Family Guy, is that I don't want to feel bad about laughing at a joke,
right.
And that's what it does more times than not. So quickly move on to Saturday, and Fox has some Q Viva, the Chosen music talent search show thing coming, and then NBC will be replaying Encores of Smash, followed by running out the rest of The Firm as of February 18th. And then BBC America over on the cable side of things has the fourth season of the British version of Being Human, the original version, and that starts up as of February 25th. I have no idea really what the Chosen thing is, other than they're searching for talent in South America, and I stopped watching The Firm after like the second episode, but I am very interested in the fourth season of Being Human, given how the third season... the third series ended. I want to see where they go from there.
The ghost has new roommates.
But definitely interesting there. I think that'll do it for a few thoughts on what all the stuff that's coming this spring. And we'll jump into the primetime segment and talk The Walking Dead, Season 2, Episode 8, Nebraska, the second season, mid-season premiere. And Daniel, you said you don't watch it, but...
No, I stopped. I watched most of the first season, then I watched the first episode of the second, maybe the first two episodes. And I don't think it's... I think it has a lot of problems for a TV show. Some of it's in the premise and some of it's in the characterization. I think zombies are an inherently problematic for TV shows to focus on, because zombies kill basically through attrition. They keep coming no matter what. They keep coming. They slowly chip away at your defenses, your food, your supplies. They take you out one by one. And that's something that's not necessarily... That's a problem for a TV show, because a TV show should have arcs. They should have people you can defeat, that sort of thing. Whereas zombies don't provide that. They're basically a... I wrote a blog last year about how zombies are basically equivalent to a natural disaster. And natural disasters can make for great movies, but they don't make for great TV shows, because there's no character they're fighting against, really. Occasionally they fight against each other, but they can't really fight against the zombies because the zombies aren't characters. They're forces of nature.
Yeah, I think I still watch the show. I think it does have some problems, but I think they ruined it in the finale of the first season when they had made it to the CDC, but the CDC has no information, and ultimately anything that they were doing or trying to do, the one guy that was left there, the place burns to the ground.
Right.
And there's nothing set on the horizon, and they even, you know, talk about it in this new season, that there is no cure. There's nothing. And so there's no overarching story of any trying to solve the problem of being able to stop this. It's like you said, it's just, they just keep coming. There's pretty much nothing you can do about it except try to, you know, survive day by day. But over the long term, you end up losing more and more people. That I think they missed out on that. It seems that they should have set up, there should have been a long-term goal of not just trying to find some place, you know, semi-safe, but a possibility of ending the crisis. And it just happens to be that these people stumbled onto what that might be, but that's not where they went.
And the problem would be fine if the characters were more enjoyable to watch. They're just fun to hang out with. I mean, if you had basically Walking Dead with the cast of Firefly, say, and that kind of writing there, it would still be enjoyable to see these because the people are fun to hang out with. But most of the characters are either bland or obnoxious. And that's a problem for any show, especially a problem for a show where you're asked to root for these people against the inevitable.
I could not disagree with you guys more.
Okay, well, good.
There are times when things happen that I kind of don't like. But overall, what... I don't feel the enemy, that the zombies are the real enemy. I think it's basically the person standing next to you, or the person who you run into who's another survivor who you haven't met yet.
They did finally expand that out into that episode where they did finally run into some more people.
But, I mean, they did that all first season, too. They ran into people and they didn't necessarily fight with them, but there was conflict along the way. I mean, this season having... oh, God, now I'm not going to think of his name. Shane sort of go a little bit batty and rogue, you know, basically leave the Otis to be killed by the zombies. He shot him in the leg so that he, you know, like as a decoy, so to speak, so he could stay alive. I find all that totally fascinating. The group dynamics, the fact that there are other survivors out there, the fact that the guy who runs the farm was hiding his family of zombies, thinking that they could be cured at some point. I don't know. I love the whole humanity against humanity type of thing, and can we rise to be better people as opposed to just take care of ourselves? I love all that.
Yeah. I think I probably fall in between the two of you in that I don't find all the characters quite as annoying necessarily as Daniel does. I think some of the, since they've set a more, they set a definitely a serious tone for the show, that some of the character moments and stuff that happens I do find interesting. But overall, the show, I am less and less wanting to, you know, stick around with it, especially when they keep ending up in, like, they're just on the farm. Apparently, they're supposed to start happening again to close out the season. But if every season is they find a new place to sit around for a while, and then stuff finally happens, that gets kind of old as well. And then the thing that does bug me is when the characters do stupid stuff, like in the episode where Lori leaves to go find her husband, and
she flips the car.
That went to find Herschel, and she runs into a zombie and flips the car. I had no idea why. Just an hour or so, basically, in time. It's not like a lot of time's passed. Why all of a sudden she was super hot to find the people that had just went, that had just left to go find somebody else. Like, why she was trying to get somebody else to go find him now. And then why she decides that she needs to go. And no other reason but for her to get into Jeopardy. There was no other reason than to have her flip the car. And so those types of things, when they just do
stupid... I'm not sure that more time hadn't passed, but either way...
It's not a lot of time. You're still in the same day from when they left. It hasn't gotten dark yet. You know, it's somewhere in the period of time that they haven't been gone a super long period of time.
I'll tell you, Jason, if she loses the baby, then we know why that happened. Yeah. And then that's kind of annoying too. That's kind of not.
it's all really too bad, just because the season premiere had one of the best scenes that I've ever seen on television, where they're trying to hide under the cars and the zombies are coming through. And that was one of the most suspenseful scenes I've seen at all. And then after that happened, the characters started talking, and I thought that was the mistake. I mean, they can create these great set pieces, but they need to have the genuine personalities for the characters and make them more vibrant. To make those set pieces, I guess, punch a little harder, or for the pieces in between the set pieces to be entertaining.
See, I love the characters on here.
I just find a lot of them kind of bland, especially the main guy.
But I guess we'll agree to disagree.
Okay.
All right. And with that, we'll move on to New Girl. Completely different. Season 1, Episode 13, Valentine's Day.
Wasn't my favorite episode of New Girl, but it was all right.
There's been a lot of talk about how Lizzie Caplan's really improved the show, and I sort of agree with that. They say you need somebody to basically, as the straight man in a sense for Jess, you need somebody to call Jess on her BS and her personality. You need that contrast there. And I think it's a little bit like how Big Bang Theory improved a little bit by adding more female characters. I think New Girl is doing the same thing, at least until I'm sure that she's only on a limited arc, but seeing how that contrast could really help the show give a little bit more punchiness, I think highlighted what the show could do.
I like her anyways. She's really good, but I think overall the show has been really good. It's been a nice little surprise of comedy this season. Every once in a while, they just jump like way over the line, though, and they go too far with something where the episode becomes weird and strange instead of funny. And it hasn't happened overly often, but like the previous episode kind of did that, where all of a sudden it's a threesome, the type of thing that is happening, and you're like, wait, this is too weird, and it's not. It's just uncomfortable, but not uncomfortably funny. But I think Valentine's Day, the Clark Duke as the assistant,
see him,
was really funny, and then hearing his story causing him to quit not working for Lizzie Caplan anymore was kind of funny. and all this stuff taking place on Valentine's Day, you know, Winston ending up at basically a girls' night where you know, he's trying to show that he's changed. I think they do a pretty good job with most of the stuff, and I think this episode was interesting, where they finally, you know, Schmidt finally gets the girl that he's been pursuing, but, you know, on a one-time basis probably, and that Jess was briefly thought of maybe heading that direction too, because she was so hot to have this one-night stand experience instead of as something different from what she normally does.
I think that the show could really reach a level of happy endings pretty decent and enjoyable most of the time, and that's the kind of level that the New Girl could reach if it continues improving.
Yeah, I think so. But I think they do need maybe that other character, or at least to have somebody, you know, all the time that, you know, that somebody's dating necessarily or something like that, where there is sort of this other character that isn't quite sure about Jess, you know, type of thing
right.
to play with. There's always, but I think they did develop a pretty nice dynamic with the main four pretty quickly, especially, you know, having to change cast from the original pilot to the, you know, the second episode, that I think they've gone about creating some interesting characters that on occasion do make me laugh as much as watching happy endings. Okay, so let's jump over to Justified, Season 3, Episode 5, Thick as Mud. I don't think we've talked any Justified since this season started, really.
Quarles meets Boyd. How about that scene?
Yeah.
Friggin' love this show, so. I think that every actor on the show is sort of top-notch and hitting everything correctly, and the writing's great. I love the dialogue, even though it's, you know, it's heavily stylized and everything, of course. But and I love, there's just tension all the time. Great. I can't really say anything bad about it.
The way that the show is able to create a very fascinating, enjoyable, fully formed three-dimensional characters for their single episodes is incredible.
I mean, in the sense that the pilot the premiere of this season had a character that we thought that could have been basically the villain of the entire series, and they kill him off in the first episode. Because that's how good the show is at creating these single characters and giving them kind of making them seem real and making them seem a part of this world. The show that this season hasn't quite been as good at establishing a sense of place as the second season was with the mining arc. It's been very good at this characterization, at letting us see who these characters are.
Yeah, I think they're finally getting closer to you're seeing who and what exactly is the threat, and who these, you know, especially the new, you know, the guy down from Detroit, and then Micheletti Williamson's character, you know, as the sort of new people that have been there, or in his case has been there all along, but is now taking more of a forefront in being one of the sort of the bad guys in the show. The only thing on the show that bothers me a little bit is in the very beginning, they set the show up as, you know, he's the quick draw, he's smarter than the guys he's going up to, and too many times for me, he's ended up in a position like he ended up in this episode, where he's drugged and in a bathtub and about to be shot, where he's just barely comes to enough to be able to shoot first.
Shoot through a man.
Yeah,
and
shoot through another person and shoot the other person, which was kind of a cool scene, except that I think that, to me, it starts to take a little bit away from the character when it seems like he would have been more aware talking to her than to be able to have somebody just walk right up behind him and drug him. Those little scenes pull back on me a little bit too much from how they seem to have originally set the character up.
Part of it's that I think he's off his game. I mean, that's kind of the part of the arc of the series of this particular season, is that, you know, there's things that he's struggling a little bit. But no, I do sort of agree with that we wanted him to be the kind of the cool guy, always in control. We also want your hero to be in danger. You know, there's that balance, but definitely.
Well, to get in danger, but it seems like, you know, last season, you know, they had him hanging upside down, getting beaten, and
It
just almost, not that he doesn't end up in danger or gets him, you know, goes a little too headstrong and gets into problems and stuff like that, but a little too often it's come out where it's been a little too lucky that somebody else has come along and helped him out. Like, he hasn't been able to figure out a way himself out of the situation. Like, this one just happened to be lucky that the guy took his gun and put it in the back of his jeans. And she didn't know that. So, and fell in the right direction that he was able to grab the gun from behind him. So, that type of stuff, it almost starts to play a little too many coincidences, too much luck, a little bit plays into it. I think a little bit could be that, you know, this season they're playing it where he's, you know, he got, you know, shot at the end of last season. And
I also have a feeling that Raylan doesn't ever believe that he's not going to come out on top. which I like.
It's a little confident, yeah.
Yeah, which I like because, you know, I feel that's him. You know, he always believes he's in control. I mean, everybody, Elmer Leonard's characters, there's just like this whole cool factor. And maybe he does feel, maybe he's a little overconfident that I can handle pretty much any situation. I mean, he puts himself in situations that, you know, he's either incredibly brave or stupid. You know?
Basically, the character is Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's Harrison Ford. He shoots first. but also just kind of the notion of that we like Indiana Jones because he's suave and he's smart and he has a one-liner. But also he's headstrong and occasionally gets in over his head. And that's what made the first three Indiana Jones movies so enjoyable, is that occasionally he gets in over his head. And that's what we want in a show, is for our hero, for us to be genuinely worried for our hero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for us to continually putting him in those situations. I mean, if it could be more character-based in the way he gets out of the situations or gets into the situations as opposed to luck-based, that would improve the show even more.
Yeah, I think a little more often if there was a little less luck-based, or somebody else happens along that ends up helping him out because they have something they need to do, and they would improve the show a little bit better. But maybe, you know, maybe that could come around as he comes back together. But the way this episode ends, it doesn't look like it ends in such a way that it's not gonna, his head's not gonna be on straight exactly going forward.
Well, another thing about this episode which you touched on was that the Limehouse character, it's revealed that he has a spy who's with Quarles. You know, she's not directly like around Quarles, but she's pretending to date his lackey and she's reporting to him. And I love how now they're starting to thread all these, you know, the major baddies together, even though, you know, we've killed off. There was the one character in the first episode you were talking about, but then there was also the guy, the pawnbroker guy, who was killed off, who could have been he's the same guy who played Otis on The Walking Dead, who also got killed off. You know, so there's all these baddies already that could have stuck around and been probably pretty cool, who are gone. But
the gimmick of this season is really this six way or seven way chess match, in a sense. You have all these people gunning for some of the same things, trying to betray each other, trying to get one over each other, and basically we're beginning to see that the people who aren't as smart are losing quickly.
Right.
And so that's one of the things we saw in the last two or three episodes, is that the people who aren't quite as clever have already been killed off, and the smartest will survive.
Right. And I just love the Quarles Boyd scene, because they're after the same exact thing, and they basically just, they both sort of peed on their territory.
Yeah.
You know, they marked their space and drew the line. And then there's Limehouse, who, you know, is just going to come in and either pick up the pieces or somehow work its way in there. Very cool.
Okay, and so the last show we have on our list this week is Revenge, Season 1, Episode 15, Chaos. So how'd you like how it played out, finally getting to the point where that they foreshadowed in the premiere episode?
Who knew who was going to be dead? Who figured it out ahead of time?
I hadn't. The AV Club writer guessed it, but
I hadn't figured it out ahead of time before the episode aired, but as soon as he appeared on screen, I knew who it was.
Right. That's kind of when I knew, too.
I think I was disappointed, I think, with the episode in two ways. First of all, it's one of those situations where I think they cared more about twist than what was best for the show. It surprised us more that Tyler was the one that got shot than Daniel, who got shot. Wouldn't the show have been a lot more interesting going forward if it was Daniel that got shot? I mean, wouldn't have that made taking the show to a new level? And secondly, I was a little disappointed with kind of the notion of, oh, now we're having this new mystery of who is the actual killer. And the show isn't one that is, it's not a show that's fueled by mystery. It's fueled by momentum and constant twists, and not by these long-term mysteries that we'll eventually figure out.
Do you think this will be a long-term thing?
I think it could be I don't know, we could find out next episode, but it's also likely that they'll wait it till the season reveal.
The finale?
Finale reveal, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of back to what you were talking about Game of Thrones, the whole idea that they're not brave enough to kill off a major character. But you're right, that would have been really awesome if it you know, everybody would have been sad for a while and everything, but, or maybe not. They could have gone a lot of different ways.
Yeah, because you're not totally sure, like, how much, you know, Emily really likes or loves him, and how much of it really is, this is just a means to her ends. And so what that would have meant had he got killed, you know, in the... But if it ultimately would have got killed by Tyler, then it wouldn't have been really because of her. It wouldn't have been necessarily her mess. I mean, that guy was off his rocker and trying to get in with them anyways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who knows how that could have spun out of control.
But he's not. I mean, the thing is that Daniel's not the most interesting character on the show by any means.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think we would have lost an incredible figure in the show if Daniel was lost. I mean, Tyler was a lot more interesting and enjoyable than that character.
But I'm wondering how long can they go with... I mean, I guess there could be somebody else completely, but when you have Daniel and Tyler, you know, face-to-face with, Tyler's got the gun, and then Daniel shows up later and he's got blood on him, it seems to me that something had to have happened if he got shot from a distance and he was still close to him, or... I guess it does sort of leave it open a little bit. They set it up that it's supposed to look like he did it and then maybe ditched the gun or something. But ultimately, if that was, it wouldn't be much of a mystery or much of anything there, because the guy was off his rocker and was escaped and coming back after the people that he had already supposedly killed somebody in their midst. And so I think they could have that should be able to be washed away easily, kind of in the story.
Well, you know how they brought Jack on the scene, and they brought Amanda on the scene, and they brought the sensei dude.
Yeah, so that we're all sort of around there, and so you're not sure who really shot him. I mean, it's possible that he was shot from a distance, and he just happened to be standing close to be able to get blood on him, and then sort of stumbled away.
Didn't Emily bury the box somewhere nearby there, too, earlier in the episode? And how did the sensei get the box from Tyler, her box of goodies?
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of head nods and glances and stuff like that were setting up things that you're not sure who's doing what. But I'm not really sure where they go with it. Just seems like a bit of a storyline where it could look like he killed him and maybe somebody else did, and they'll reveal who actually did, you know, later on. But ultimately, him being an escaped convict that had already held them at gunpoint once before and already, you know, had been arrested for, you know, even though he was set up for doing it, killing somebody else, it seems like he shows up and gets shot and whatever, that it seems that you can sort of easily dispense with that as this crazy guy came back and I had to defend it. You know, even if it was I had to defend myself, or, you know, I didn't shoot him but somebody did, it just seems like there wouldn't be a big deal, as big a deal as maybe is they're going to play it. When, you know, a guy like Tyler gets shot.
Right, like the whole big investigation and everything.
Yeah.
But to me, this show succeeds most when it ends with asking you, okay, what's going to happen next? As opposed to, hey, what happened? And this show ended, this episode ended with what happened versus what's going to happen next. And I think that could be a problem if the show chooses to go that route in the future.
Like, you feel like it needs to wrap this up right away and keep on Emily's little mission. Not a little mission, but...
Yeah, where these other things come along and take a little bit of an arc or play out over an episode two or three, it's the way of extending things out where it's not always a takedown of the week or it's, you know, things get in the way. There's a plan, but there's unforeseen things happening that continue to push it out. And for the most part, I will say, while I wasn't surprised that it was when you saw Tyler show up, that it was Tyler on the beach... It was sort of a surprise for Tyler to show back up. So, you know, in the episode, because you figured they had he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that if he was ever going to come back, that it wouldn't have been just a couple episodes later. So that was sort of a good surprise little twist on the... Because on these type of shows, I try to know nothing. I don't want to see... I really don't even want to see, like, next week's preview type stuff, because sometimes ABC or... insert whatever network will give too much away in that. But I think that'll do it for episode 124. Thank you both for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it. Let me know if you want to do it again sometime.
We're in the position of having at least one guest every week, you know, for the foreseeable future. So
good to meet you, Daniel.
We'll
by the way,
in the rotation.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was fun. The episode will be, you can find the show notes for this episode, will be at tvtimes3.com, spell it all out. As always, you can find the show on Twitter at tvtimes3, facebook.com/tvtimes3. You can listen to it various ways. If you would like to rate us on iTunes, we appreciate that. And the opening and closing music was provided by IODA Promenet. The song is TV Party by the Asylum Street Spankers from their Mercurial title put out by Yellow Dog Records. And that officially ends the show. So thanks again for both of you coming on. And as I mentioned, show notes will be at TV Times 3. And I'll have links to where you can find Kurt and Daniel online. And the next episode will be the original three. Ray and Amory will both be back with me next week.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Have a good day.
Bye.
We sit glued to the TV set all night.
And every day.
Why go into the outside world at all?
It's such a fright.
We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.